The place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Monday, October 21st, 2022, and this is episode 964 of Living Free in Tennessee. And I just want to give a shout out to the Midwest Preparedness Projects folks who uploaded that 30-second intro video because they were using my account to do one of our tour lives. And I found out after doing it last week that even though I've told YouTube not to put advertisements on the live streams, that they are putting advertisements in. And so a lot of y'all were not getting the first part of the show. I do have plans to make an actual Living Free in Tennessee introduction, and we'll get that done at some point. I actually have a different introduction in the works that I'll be doing in advance of next week, which I'll talk to you about a little bit later in the show. Today, we're going to talk about how to create your homestead plan for keeping old age in mind, which we've already talked about once from just the standpoint of different areas to look at and ideas I have for making things work better as you age on your homestead. Today's more about the process. So we're going to talk about that as well as our usual segments, including Tales from the Prepper Pantry. I have a frugality tip in. We've got the shopping report back this week. All of those things and more. Just stay tuned for the show. And for those of you who are new to the show, because we've had a whole bunch of new people pop in the last few weeks, every Monday we go through our usual segments. They usually take anywhere from 15 minutes to half an hour, and then we do one focused topic for the show. That's what we do every Monday. When Tuesdays, we have a live interview with somebody or a group of somebodies. And then Friday, I do a homestead update called Homestead Happenings with Tactical Redneck, who lives on this homestead as well. And people get amused because it's like we never talk to each other until we get on the show on Friday, and then we have to figure out what we're going to do on the homestead. So that's sort of fun too. Anyway, before we jump into that, I want to talk about our featured event of today's show, and that is Partner with Trees on the Permaculture Homestead, hosted by Strong Roots Resources, which will be in my living room on November 2nd from 10 o'clock in the morning till probably about 3:30 in the afternoon. The price includes paying Carrie from Strong Roots Resources, as well as lunch, and the price is $90. He's going to talk about how to choose trees for your homestead, but better than that, how to step back, assess what your needs really are so you get the right kind of tree in the right kind of places, because you can have trees serve different functions on your homestead. And if you haven't thought about that in advance, you may put trees where you don't want them that shouldn't be there and then have to take them out, for example. Or you might not have thought, hey, this tree could be used as a fence and I need some fences there and I want a living fence with this tree. All sorts of different ways to analyze that. If you have the big picture in mind before you start throwing trees all over the place, you're much more likely to have success. I have not seen a class like this offered before. Usually tree classes are like how to put the food forest in, how to do plant gills and all those things, which are all super useful, how to trim the roots. And I'm sure we'll talk about those things in the class, but stepping back and going for how you make the plan, that's a winner right there. Check it out at livingfreeintennessee.com. Again, that's Saturday, November 2nd, 10 o'clock in Lancaster, Tennessee, 1 hour east of Nashville. I also want to thank our two show sponsors today. The first sponsor is Agorist Tax Advice. Matthew Sersley from Agorist Tax Advice has been supporting this show almost for 2 years now. We're closing in on 2 years, which is pretty awesome. And he offers a service that's great through agoristaxadvice.com. What he does is he works with you to analyze your finances and then talk to you about different ways you can structure your business and other parts of your life so that you can take advantage of the biggest part of the tax code, which is all the exceptions to the rules. Find out more at agoristaxadvice.com and you can schedule your consultation there. He does webinars from time to time. I haven't heard about a webinar recently, but he offers free webinars and you can learn individual pieces. He also has an email list you can sign up for where he sends emails about a specific tax write-off you may not have known about and how to track it and all of those things. One of the things I've found, because I've worked with Matthew this year, is that in order to be able to have him analyze my finances, they had to be tracked in a different way than I had been tracking them, which caused me to make some structural changes to how we do finances at the Coleslaw Industries, which is the name of my company. And the cool thing about that is my whole life got easier because I've been doing a lot of things manually that could be automated. A friend of mine who's also a CFO offered to set everything up for me and just got it humming. I'm still learning how to use the systems that are in place, but I have much faster access to just the information I need to make good business decisions, which is totally separate from the advice I'm getting from Matthew, right? So check it out, agoristaxadvice.com. Our second sponsor of today's show is EMP Shield. EMP Shield has a device that will protect your whole house or whole car or whole camper or whole solar system from unexpected things that happen with electricity, like, oh, I don't know, a lightning bolt or a planned surge because somebody hit a telephone pole with their car. Okay, so when I give you those hypothetical examples, they're real examples. That happened to one of my rental homes where a telephone pole on the street with the transformer on it was hit by a car and knocked over. And that sent an interesting surge through the lines, and then nobody had power for a few days while they fixed it. Well, imagine if you had a really expensive computer system or television or your refrigerator or an electric stove or any of the things we have in our home, and it gets hit by that surge of electricity. EMP Shield has a device that protects you from that. And if it, for some reason, fails, they have a $25,000 warranty on it. So they'll replace damaged stuff up to $25,000. You can find out more at empshield.com. Use the coupon code LFTN for $50 off. We are putting one in Wednesday this week on the swim spa electrical service so that, what if that gets hit by lightning or something, the swim spa gets replaced. Like, it's a $350 to $400 insurance policy is basically what that is. Anyway, with that, it's time for our live stream discussion. We have a few live streams this week. The first one is tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning. We're talking with Kiri Torgler of Thunderhill Farms and Sean Mills from Hack My Homestead. Sean's just gotten back from helping out in North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee with all of the stuff that's happened with the flooding that followed Hurricane Helene. And Kiri and I have been talking about just different ways that building community and doing events and finding your passion are aligning in her life. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to highlight the SOE party, which she's been working diligently on. And we'll take any of your questions live tomorrow morning at 9:30 on the YouTube channel or any of the other places that we stream. The second live stream this week is 9:30 a.m. on Friday. That's Homestead Happenings with the Tactical Redneck. Usually goes about an hour, and we just give you updates on what's happening on the homestead. And we've been moving sheep. Hijinks have ensued. We'll just leave it at that. With that, it's time for our first official segment, Tales from the Prepper Pantry. This is where we talk about storing what you use and using what you store, which is how your pantry should be designed. And when you move to a homestead, what happens is you start getting a lot of things all at once at different times of year. And so eating seasonally becomes a lot easier, but also storing seasonally. And we are shifting from storage season to use it up season. I've already started hitting the canned goods recently. Like, we've started using the canned green beans, which, as y'all know, is my mission every year is to get enough canned green beans to get through till when we have stuff coming off the garden in the spring again. And hopefully, you know, it keeps, well, like in the spring, the first thing you get are greens. So the greens are great, but greens every day, it's like, it's nice to have some green beans from the jars. I'm just saying. So counterintuitively, we are using up things all the way right now. And I usually have a cushion of time. And the reason I'm doing that is that what we use has changed a lot in the last 5 years. And I'm really observing how fast we're going through different things because it has changed. And some things we don't use at all. So those have been, you know, like if it's sitting there for 6 months and I'm never using it, it's started to be given away to different people who do use it. So you may have seen my post about the infamous bottle of ketchup that ended up in my pantry. I don't know how, because we don't use ketchup that isn't homemade most of the time. And so I had gotten rid of all the ketchup last April. And somehow this one thing of ketchup had come back. And so my suspicion is somebody brought it and left it here, which also happens in my pantry. So we've just used up, I think I have the last jar of olives. So olives are something I store because sometimes I want like a salty treat and olives make a really good one, which without adding a whole lot of weird chemicals to your diet. So yeah, I know there's vinegar in there, but you know what I mean. So, you know, I used to go through, I don't know, 8 to 10 jars of olives. I think I go through 2 jars of olives a year now. So storing 20 jars of olives would be way too many jars of olives to last a year or so. And things that are in jars do go bad over time. So we're just really observing that as part of the great prepper pantry redesign of 2024, which is also in progress. So Ken Ash came and redid the whole roof on that. And now it's a cinder block space. So there was a big old hole in the cinder block for a vent for a wood burning water heater, which is no longer in there. And so that's all been kind of on hold while we were really busy with Self Reliance Festival and all of those things. So Tactical and I had a meeting this morning where I said, okay, it is time to finish the prepper pantry, because what happens when you have a space like that ripped apart is stuff can't be in the space. And then the stuff has to go somewhere else. And we end up with this like game of moving stuff to work on things, to move stuff to work on things. And I call different projects bottlenecks, right? So the prepper pantry is a bottleneck where until I can put the things that go away in that pantry back in that pantry, it's a bottleneck to forward progress on other projects in the homestead. So our like highest and best use of construction time at this point is going to be the prepper pantry. And in order for that to happen faster rather than slower, it can't just be one person has in mind how it'll work. Like we have to have the plan written down on paper so we both agree what desired end state is. So right now, the first focus is making sure any gaps like that hole in the cinder block are filled in properly, and that any caulking that needs to be done up around, you know, where the roof meets the wall is done properly. And then from there we do wiring and making sure that, because that's also the utility closet, like the services are done. So that's a big thing happening, which is also part of why I'm doing a lot more use it up in my pantry than usual, because I don't want a bunch of stuff sitting in my living room and bins for the prepper pantry. But at the same time, I still want to maintain that cushion of food. So the good news is most of my canned goods storage doesn't go in there at all, because sometimes it gets below freezing in there. And I don't want stuff in jars going below freezing, because then water expands, it breaks the jars, and that's not fun at all. We had a pizza party and German chocolate cake yesterday with the Holler neighbors and some local friends, and it was super fun. And the way we chose what went on the pizza was based on what was in my pantry. That doesn't mean we didn't go to the store and buy some stuff, because pepperoni is not stored in my pantry. And pepperoni is a necessary ingredient if you're going to have pizza. And yes, I don't usually eat pizza. Probably why my voice is scratchy today. Ah, water and a cough. So we looked at what we had, and I sort of had an initial list of what I thought would make good toppings. And then we made toppings based on what we had in the pantry. The Eversoles were driving past the store on the way home. So we actually bought the pizza crusts. Usually I'd make them, but we bought them because that's how we were feeling yesterday. And we made homemade sauce from the tomato sauce in jars using garlic that we grew here, basil that's still alive in the yard, and oregano that's still alive in the yard. And that was delicious. And then any of the tomatoes that have been ripening on my counter, I talked to you guys about that process last week, cut those up as possible toppings, the olives. And then we ended up using breakfast sausage with Italian seasoning in it to make Italian sausage, and cheese that I had in the freezer that was pre-shredded. We bought some more cheeses to add to it to make it more interesting, that sort of thing. It was a really fun time. And I think the most fun was that, we got to assemble the pizzas together. So, you know, people who were here when it was time to put pizzas in the oven, we had to make them. So we made them and threw them in the oven. And Tactical, of course, got the ketovore one with a ground beef crust and then all the pizza toppings on top. And he ate that whole pizza by himself. What he doesn't know is I have another secret meat crust that I made at the same time. So, yeah, Haas says cauliflower crust is great. We usually, as a convenience food item, keep 2 to 4 cauliflower crust pizzas in the freezer that we get at Aldi, which has a higher carb count than I'd like, but it's easy. and it's convenient and it's not that expensive. So those are all gone after Self-Reliance Festival, because when I haven't been around cooking, those pizzas have a tendency to disappear. And then yesterday when I was making the ground beef crust, I was like, well, I have enough for two so I can freeze one. And I have a lot of ground beef to finish using up before the next cow comes in. So we've been having meatballs and hamburgers and meatloaf and Mexican food, like taco meat and Korean beef. And I just keep finding different ways to use ground beef. And I realized I could just make a few more ground beef pizza crusts, and it would probably get through just about the rest of that. We've got usually, I mean, like right about now is when we start talking about the cow, and usually second week of December, we pick up cow from the butcher. So the question will become if we're getting one or two, and we went through two cows this year. Now, half of one of those cows was pretty small, but the rest of them were like full-sized cows. So that is just a point of learning for us. We will have more lamb meat this year, though, because I'm probably only selling one lamb. When I realized we're processing four lambs, I have one already sold. And usually I would want three to four for us for the year. So we'll keep two. And then I'll have one more lamb for sale. And that's it until next year's crop. And then I have the one ram who is responsible for the next generation, so to speak. And we'll see how he does. And eventually we may either process him or he may go on to another farm, because he is a beautiful St. Croix. And yeah, I wish he was a little bit friendlier, but it all works out. It is time to really can the rest of the tomatoes. Mom and I thought we would get the rest of the tomatoes, which I just put in the freezer so that I could can them when it was colder. It's time to can those, and we still haven't. And hopefully that will be done before the end of October, because I want room in the freezer. I talked to you about how it's like use it up time for the freezer, but I mean, for the pantry, it's fill it up time for the freezer, because as the weather gets colder, then when you process animals, it's colder outside and it's easier to do. So like usually this time of year, it's like the cow, the sheep, the deer. Those are all getting processed. We're going to have rabbits to process in another 6 weeks or so. So those things start going into the freezer and filling it up. So it's kind of like two different purposes, but you know, the stuff from the garden had to be dried and canned and all of those things. So that's done. Hey, hey, Alabama says, when I used to buy meat in bulk, we ate it pretty fast as long as it was on hand. Yeah. I'm actually in this weird place where have multiple weird things to cook, like hearts and tongues. So we're still working through that. I think one or two more tongues and two more hearts, and one's a pork heart and one's a cow heart. And I don't think I've ever cooked a pork heart. So that'll probably be another live video cooking day that we do, because those are kind of fun. Anyway, I'm also re-upping my HarvestRight repair projects. I think the heating element's out. They've had me troubleshooting different things to assess whether it's the heating element or the computer. And I just told them, like, with Self-Reliance Festival coming and all the other stuff going on, I can't responsibly do all this troubleshooting while also doing all my other things. And they said, well, we're going to just mark your ticket as complete, but let us know when you want to open it again. So I'll be reaching out to them on that after I do my next two troubleshooting things. I think we're down to the final answer on that. And then I'm excited to get the freeze dryer back up and freeze drying, especially this time of year, because it puts heat out. And in my house, I heat with wood. But the other thing that happens at this time of year is it's like not quite cold enough to have a wood fire, or you let it go out every day and then you have to restart it, which is not a big deal. But if you have something like tomatoes to can, that puts heat in the air and then you don't have to run the wood stove. Or if you have a freeze dryer running, that puts heat in the air, so you don't have to run the wood stove. So you start function stacking some of those things, and that kind of, it reduces the need for fires. And that's a good use of energy on the homestead for sure. The weekly shopping report is back from Joe. He is posting these over on Discord. And if you want to connect with us on Discord and you're on the Monday mail, I believe there's a link in that tells you how to connect with us on Discord. I'm occasionally on there. I'm not on there all that much, but there's a whole community of people over there who used to be on MeWe MeWe and went to Discord. And Joe is one of those people. And they started their own little like shopping report chain there. So he posts it in a really easy to find place. So here's what he has to say. The Dollar Tree stock is good in all areas, including plastics. They also have toilet paper and paper towels. And for those of you who haven't been paying attention, toilet paper and paper towels apparently went on the skinny list again because people freaked out because the ports were closing. And somehow the ports closing means you don't get to wipe your bottom with toilet paper. I don't know. I am supposed to pick toilet paper up as part of my restock plan for the fall because I buy a cube of that stuff at a time and then, you know, replenish it every so often. And I'm wondering if I'll even get it in my order. That's the $1 million question today. But if I don't, whatever, not a big deal. We have plenty of TP here. And there's so many other things you can do if you're ever in an actual situation where you can't find toilet paper. But that's a different topic for a different show. Home Depot, a 2x4x8, is unchanged in price from last week at $385. Quickly looking at some tools, they've reduced the quantities of a lot of other brands like Klein in favor of Milwaukee, but pegboards were full. At Aldi, once again, they had almost no wet cat food, just individual small peel cups. There were some price decreases this week. Staple prices were as follows. Eggs, $2.15, which is down. Whole milk, $2.88. Heavy cream, $5.39. Orange juice, $3.45. Butter, $3.99. Bacon, $3.99. Potatoes, $3.99, which is down. Sugar, $2.99. Flour, $2.35. 80% lean ground beef was $4.49. They again have a small amount of TP in stock. Apparently, TP has been a big deal, guys. And a gallon of untainted, that means ethanol-free, gasoline remains at $3.59.9. And that gas price has been like right at that level for a long time, like maybe the whole year. Maybe the whole year. Next up, we have a frugality tip from Margo. And she says, have you ever had a bird peck at your window nonstop? I have one right now. That's how this topic came up. Like wake you up and then you have a constant headache for weeks or months because it's just trying to kill its reflection. Don't waste your money on all the gadgets to keep the birds away like plastic owls, window cleans, and spinners. Go to the store, buy a $5 cloth shower curtain, and hang it outside of your window with a couple of cup hooks. It lets light in, so and it can get rained on. And most importantly, it works because the bird can't see their reflection anymore. So you save your money on all the things they say will deter birds and just block their reflection. I did this 2 years ago and still had the same shower curtain up over the bedroom window and we sleep peacefully. Yeah, I've had a collection of different birds just sort of pecking at my window. And I was talking about it because I hadn't had one for a while and then I got one back this week and it's a female this time. So, and she will just spend hours pecking at that window and fighting with the window and just never ending bird loop. So, and that can be a problematic if you can't sleep through that. She doesn't actually start till after I get up anyway, so it hasn't really bothered me, but I may try this if it starts bothering me. That's the $1 million question. Next up, we have Operation Independence, and this is where we talk about building local ongoing revenue into our lives and avoiding the need to pay a guy. And first and foremost on our mind lately has been making meat. So this weekend, if you listen to the Homestead Happenings update, this weekend we did get the female sheep separated, older ones from younger ones, because we want the ram to visit the older ones and not the younger ones. Now, as of today, the bottle lamb, Stormy, apparently dropped that and is on the other side with the older ones, but she is too young to be bred. So, and we have one older one on the wrong side of the fence. So I think there was a plan in place to move that, to get that last one over. And then we can pretty much put little sheep wherever we want her. But the question is, why did she decide she needed to go over that fence? Like, is she friendly in particular with one of the older sheep? And that's why? And do we need to bring her back here? Because what I don't want is an unfortunate mistake where she gets bred when she's way too young for this to happen, for the whole process. Because she's also small framed. I think because she was raised as a bottle lamb and not with a mother, it has impacted. Like, she was growing faster than everybody, but then when we weaned her, she stopped growing as fast. And I think that's because they were still getting some milk. And I felt it was time that she needed to stop being on the commercial milk and really adjust to the grass. Now, she looks very healthy, but do not want her pregnant. So that's just been a lot of work, but we'll see how it goes. The next part is we have to just catch the ram and put him in the right place. So that's going to be probably all going down tomorrow in and amongst the rest of the day, which should prove to be fairly entertaining. The other meat we are creating is bunny meat. So the new bunny has visited her paramour this week, and there was supposed to be a second one. I have one white rabbit that did not give birth last time. And I thought she was in the cage with a male, but she was not. So I think I miscommunicated about with Tactical about that, because he told me she was in there and I looked outside and I'm like, she is not in there. So he's already taken her out, but didn't take the other one out, or she didn't go over there. And that's something I will follow up on. So we have a calendar where I track all of this, and the one who just had babies, it's almost time to wean the babies, and then I give her a few weeks off, and then we'll put her back in with the bucks and just start making as many bunnies as we can this winter, because they do better reproducing here in the winter than the summer. It gets too hot in the summer for it. So right now is when we put rabbits in the freezer, as I said, and rabbits are so easy to make happen. I was so resistant to rabbits early on the homestead, and it cuts down on the dog food bill. We eat rabbits from time to time, and it's super easy to maintain. Their poop is the best garden fertilizer I've used. So it's kind of funny. I was so resistant to that for so long. It's now time for the main topic of today's show. Plan your homestead for old age. Now, the motivation behind this is that it's not that I'm getting old. It's that I know I'm going to get old. Maybe I am getting old at my age. I don't know. But I really started thinking about this a few years ago as I had been building this homestead before I knew what permaculture was. And then I learned what permaculture was. And then it was like, oops, back to the drawing board. And then when you start doing permaculture designs, you start asking yourself questions like, how many hours a day do I want to spend maintaining my food forest? And the answer is 2 hours a month, maybe. I don't want to spend any time maintaining my food forest, as a matter of fact. I'd rather spend that time other places on the homestead. And I'm not afraid to tell the truth about that one to anybody who's advising me on how to do it, right? And as I got to thinking about that, I realized like there are things I like doing on the homestead better than other things, but there are also things set up on my homestead that I do manually in the hardest way possible, because that's the way I've always done it since I got here. And that is not the best choice moving forward. And then I saw another homestead talk about how they really spent the first year thinking about how the inside of their house was. So they made sure it was all updated and the kitchen was the way they wanted it for processing. And they had an entertainment area because they like to watch TV to unwind when they've had a hard day. And they made sure that, you know, they had access to the shower easily from outside, and a whole bunch of, they really spent that year thinking like, how should the house be? Like the inside of the house. And most homesteaders get to the homestead and they're like, how many animals can I raise this year? And then they don't have infrastructure. They put the animals out and then they build things to deal with that. And they end up in a situation where things are not ideal. And then as they get older, well, two things happen. One, they can't ever leave. They cannot ever leave. And that's a problem unless somebody else is there. And then as they get older, it becomes something they can't maintain. And then it either goes to disrepair or they have to leave. And there's no reason that we should have to do that. You can set up your homestead to be easier to maintain. And I really like, I've been thinking about this sort of design for a long time, because John Moody wrote a book, The Frugal Homesteader. And it wasn't about like how to spend more money per se, but it was also about being frugal with your time. And as a result of that, we completely changed how we organize food here so that a person can go through and do all the animals in 15 minutes. It's actually longer than that since we've added the sheep, but basically, mostly you can do it in 15 minutes and the sheep could be changed and set up differently. So that's possible. The problem with the sheep is no water infrastructure. And that's something that we may actually run some lines on my property for the sheep, because that doesn't have to be that way here. And Tactical's just hesitant to do it on property that he doesn't own. And I'm starting to think maybe we should do it on property he doesn't own anyway, because it saves so much time not to be carrying 5-gallon jugs of water. Plus, when I need to dump 5-gallon jugs of water, they're heavy, and the ones we have don't have like two handles. So it's like one handle, and that takes me time, and I spill water, and then, you know, I have to do two trips, and that whole thing is not ideal. That's a really good example of something that's not designed well for old age at all. So when you, if you already have a homestead, you can assess your homestead for how well it's set up for you aging. And if you don't have a homestead, you can assess homesteads you're looking at for how they're going to be, or you can have ideas in mind. And this is how I would do it. I would do three things. I would assess the homestead, I would brainstorm solutions, and then I would figure out the timeline and budget. That's how I approach that whole problem. And here we're in the middle of the process, right? Like, I just made a more accessible bathroom here so that if I break a leg or something, I don't have to climb up over a clawfoot tub. Now, I had the clawfoot tub because I love it. I love a bath, and it's a deep bath, and they're awesome. Well, that's less fun when you can't bend your knee, right? And then we made the door extra wide so that if I'm ever in a wheelchair, I can, you know, it's not perfect. It's not the perfect wheelchair bathroom because it's not huge with bars on the sides, but it's something that can be gotten to, you know, more easily. And unfortunately, it's a step up, so it will need a ramp if it's ever like something that somebody has to wheel themselves into without somebody helping them. So not ideal, but better than it was. So the first thing is to assess your homestead for how well it is designed for you as you age. Because what you can do in your 20s and 30s changes in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And as much as we wish that weren't the case, and as much as we see great stories about people who keep mobility and energy and capacity into those years, eventually they don't. And the question you have to ask is, do I want to be on my homestead when I'm older and having some of these issues? Or have I just resigned myself to I'm moving to the city or moving somewhere else afterwards, right? Personally, I'd like to be on my homestead. So that's what motivated me to think about the assessment process. And what I have looked at as far as assessment is, first and foremost, what already works well on my homestead for mobility challenges. Okay. I live on a very steep hill. And so the answer is nothing outside works all that great for mobility issues. Okay. I'm going to close my door because we're getting lots of background noise today. Note to self, put phone on silent, even if it's like way across the house. So mobility on my homestead is not great. But when we designed the food forest, we had already thought about, hey, we want mobility to be better for people. So if I need to go out in a walker, it's going to have to be a rugged walker or a rugged wheelchair for the terrain, but maybe how can I make it easier to get to places I would want to get to? So when we put the food forest in, we designed micro swales so that they will eventually, so they're kind of, they're not super deep, but they're, you know, they function as swales from a water standpoint. And they will fill up with mud over time and be a little bit flat. And so then that makes an area over time that will be more accessible from a walker slash walking, because it's hard to walk, you know, sideways on the hill with one leg really bent and one really long. So that was already something we thought about. Mobility matters. When I was having my talk with Tactical earlier this year about the garden, which is way far away from my house, and he was like, why don't we have that in zone one? And it's because it was always somewhere else when I moved in. That's why. That's not a good reason, but that's why. And I've always had it there for 17 years and it's dumb and I have to force myself to go up there. Well, I was like, okay, so if we're going to move it, what I want are raised beds so I don't have to bend down later in life. And I can bring like a stool out there or something and sit and weed. And then that's easier than working in the actual ground. The funny thing is we have the garden space where my garden was, and that's still being used for some bigger crops like squash and garlic. Eventually up there will be a barn. That's going to be like the workshop slash barn area because you can drive up to it. So I could go get in a four wheeler and drive up to it. Like right now I can walk to it, no problem. But it is just where it was located was totally out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. So that's what Margo says. That sounded like an ice cream truck. Yeah, that was my telephone ringing. I've had a lot of Telegram calls coming in from people I don't know. And I don't accept Telegram calls anyway to begin with. And so if I get a call from somebody who I've never met before on Telegram, I then block them. But there seems to be a rash of that around, and I assume it has to do with the election. There's a whole segment of people trying to use Telegram as a promotional tool, and I don't think it works very well as a promotional tool, but I could be wrong. It's for me, it's more of a connection tool, and so you have to be willing to connect with people, and just forwarding crap on Telegram is not connecting. That's like slapping people in the face, and I don't respond well to being slapped in the face, so... That being said, a random unsolicited call from somebody I don't know is also instantly a block. That's actually how I avoid a lot of weird situations, I'm pretty sure. Because also, anybody who sends me a random Facebook message that says hello and nothing else, I ignore or I delete or I block if it keeps happening. Because if you can't tell me why you're reaching out to me, then you're probably up to no good. That's just my theory. Okay, so... looking at mobility, both inside your house and outside your house. Like right now, my duck coop is really hard to get to if you can't walk and climb. That's a problem. That's got to be fixed. And that's why we're moving the duck coop long term, is so that it's easier to access, easier to keep clean. And then I don't know what we're doing to that climby downy area where it is now, but it'll be integrated into the pasture, I'm sure. That whole building's going to end up coming down because that whole building has been termited so badly that it's going to come down one way or the other at some point. With our help, it'll happen, but who knows? Are things far away that should be close, and are things close that should be far away? And this goes back to learning some basic permaculture principles, figuring out what the zones are on your property, and then figuring out what needs to be in zone 0 and zone 1 and zone 2 and zone 3. It depends on how big your homestead is, how many zones you go. And if you have something far away that should be close, commit to moving it, you know, even if it was an expensive move. I'm not going to say type 1 error, but a type 1.5 error. You know, something, it's not like impossibly expensive to move, but it's going to be a pain. Like my barn, need to rebuild it anyway, and it's in the wrong place for design, so it's going to move. That makes sense. Now, if you had told me 10 years ago to build a building there, I would have called you crazy because I wouldn't have been ready mentally to process that. But now I'm like, no, that needs to be closer. And it needs to be more convenient to get things out of it. And then it makes sense to have animals uphill and their nutrients going downhill if we can do it. And, you know, all of those things make sense. And there's no garage on my house. So it kind of becomes like an extra garage space rather than I'm going to the ends of the earth to my extra garage space, right? So are things far away that should be close, and how are you going to move them? How is your house for handling you if you are ill or injured, and prolonged versus short term? This is something, you know, having watched my stepdad go through hospice in a house with two bedrooms and two bathrooms, and not really, it was not ideal. The only way that it's ideally suited for this is that it was all on one level. So at least there weren't stairs to go up and down, but it was not ideally suited for that. And meanwhile, my dad lives in a place that is, like, he lives in a very accessible place for those sorts of things happening. So when you look at your house, you may have an upstairs and downstairs, but does your downstairs have everything you would need if somebody was like not able to go up and down the stairs, but they needed to access the bathroom. They needed to be able to sleep somewhere. They needed to take a shower. And that may mean adding a bathroom downstairs if you only have upstairs bathrooms, for example. It's like, I know houses that only have upstairs bathrooms. And I'm like, you probably want one downstairs too. And if you already have a kitchen, then at least, you know, you have water there and you can tap into that. But the other thing is sleeping spaces. Some places only have sleeping spaces upstairs. My house in Oregon only had bedrooms upstairs and a bathroom upstairs, and it had a kitchen and a bathroom downstairs. And the one thing that you could do, because it had a living room and a separate dining room, is you could turn that dining room by closing it off into a bedroom so somebody had a little separation from everybody else. And then that had easy access to the bathroom and a walk-in shower. So that's what I mean. Like, it all worked. It didn't have to function as a bedroom at that time, but there was a plan in place. Like, if we have an injury, then I don't have to go up two flights of stairs to get to the bedroom every night when I'm, you know, at that point, I'm going to need the little elevator up the stairs. You know what I mean? So really look at that at your house, like directly outside your house. What are you going to need short-term injury-wise? A walk-in shower is super nice for that if you have a broken leg, for example, or an arm, rather than just a bathtub. And I say this as somebody who's had only a bathtub in her home for the whole time she's had her home until now. Like, I had a shower, like, attachment to a clawfoot tub that never got used in the house. I had an outdoor shower, and then the other bathroom was just a toilet and sink. So had I had the need for a shower that was a walk-in shower earlier, it would have been a scramble. We would have either had to rip out the top clawfoot tub and put in something else, or now there's a shower. So the outdoor shower, you have to climb upstairs to use my outdoor shower. So it's also not super mobility friendly. It used to be all at one level, which made sense. But I really liked it better there. So I made that decision knowing that someday I'm not going to be able to climb the stairs for the outdoor shower, which will be sad. But you can come down the hill on it. So it's actually kind of really convenient if you're out in the yard and you get all muddy and want to rinse off before you come in the house, which is also thinking about, like, how do I keep all the dirt from getting in the house? That's one really way, good way to do it. So look at that. Look at the size of your doorways. Look at where and how you would put in ramps, right? And then what happens if you have to be gone for a few days with your watering, with your livestock care, with your self-care, with your pipes freezing, etc.? If you heat with wood and in the middle of winter, and you only heat with wood, and in the middle of winter you have to be gone, but you have water in your house, so you have two choices: alternative heating source or drain the house, right? So what does that look like? Because we often don't plan our homesteads for how can I be gone for a few days. And I'm guilty of this. You can automate watering for your animals and be gone a couple of days and they have water at least, right? You can automate feeding for your animals and they have feed. How do we get that done? How do the chickens get in and out? Like, that sort of thing is probably the number one weakest place where homesteaders are as far as designing for old age. Because what sometimes happens in old age is that you have two people on a homestead and suddenly one of them's sick and has to go to the hospital and you are not home. This happened to a friend of mine. Her husband was in a terrible motorcycle wreck. He lived. But that day she got the call from the police and went straight to the hospital, and she didn't come home, I think, for 2 days, nor did her daughter. And the only way that her dogs got fed was somebody went over and fed her dogs. And then, like, they were big bitey dogs, and luckily I didn't get bitten. But, you know, and that's all I, you know, as a homesteader, I heard that happen. And I was like, do you need anything done with animals? And she was like, it would be really great if somebody went over and gave my dogs food. Like, they had water. They would have been fine, just hungry. And they would have pooped in the house because they were in the house, and let them out to pee. And the dogs knew me, so they let me do it. Right. Well, what happens when you don't have somebody who can go over? What does that look like? And if you have the type of dogs that will bite people, you actually have a problem in that case if you don't have a way to contain them so that somebody can help you with that. So if your plan has been to have a vicious dog, realize you have a vicious dog now and somebody can't feed that dog and they might not be able to help with the rest of your livestock if only you can help with your livestock. And that's a decision you've made. And that's not a good decision for homestead design for old age. So, you know, it's a trade-off. You get to make every one of these decisions and you get to customize this to what you want to do. But that is a total trade-off. And, you know, your plants, same thing, is watering automated for them? Or are they just going to fry because you hand water them every single day? And if you're gone for one day, that's it. What community needs do you have? By which I mean the people around you who will come and feed your dogs. Or on-site helpers as you stop being able to do as much. Do you have SOPs written, standard operating procedure, for different things? Like, if the water goes out, this is how you troubleshoot getting the water back on a well system. Or this is how you feed the animals, where you find the feed, how much feed you give each animal, what you do to turn the electric fence on, what you do to turn the electric fence off, how you rotate the sheep, right? All of those things. This is how you get a woods fire. This is how you drain the house if you have to drain the house. This is how you get the backup generator going if the power's out. I'm never so organized as when I have a house sitter, by the way, and I have to write all that stuff down, and it's time for me to do it again. My last farm sitter who was here didn't have that because she's already done it. And I was like, well, she knows. And I'm like, you know, I really do need to update that stuff, right? And that's something that's an ongoing thing. You need to keep those SOPs up to date. And when you start writing SOPs, you start seeing some bullshit that you were doing that makes no sense at all. And it's a really good time to fix that. It's a really good time to fix that. So, I mean, that's the cool thing about documentation is you're like, why do I do it that way? And then you stop doing it that way and it's easier. What's your succession housing plan? Like, are you going to stay in your house till you die, or are your kids going to be in your house and you're going to be in a smaller house somewhere on the property? That if you look at Polyface at Salatin's farm, he's in, I think, the original farmhouse, which is an old house, and his mom and dad, and I think his dad has passed now, but his mom is in a small, like, manufactured home near that house so that somebody, it's easy to get from his house to her house and take care of her, right? And then his son, Daniel, has his family up the hill in a totally another house that they're in. Well, at some point, it may be the plan that Joel and his wife move into the manufactured home. I don't know for sure, but they have that housing there. And then either his grandkids move into the older house or Daniel moves in there and the grandkids move into Daniel's house. I don't know how they're planning to do that, but there are multiple places to stay there. And so they can move around. And at some point, when you're getting older, you don't need as many square feet. And the younger generations coming up do need square feet. And if your succession plan has to do with community, then how does that work for the people in your community? List how many manual processes you have. Everything you must do manually, list it. We string fence manually. We put in step in posts manually. We Herc feed around into different places manually. We bring water to sheep manually, right? It's all manual. We were up until a week ago, we were watering my, so, you know, I'm moving my garden because I talk about it every week. I have my first raised bed all up and running. It's planted. I put more plants in it yesterday. It's gone through its first freeze with row cover. That's not ideal, but not ideal. It's a double negative. I don't know what to do with that exactly. And I was manually watering that. It was like either a sprinkler or by hand. That's a manual process. Every time you have to manually water things, that is a process. I manually feed the fish in my aquaponic system. I built an automated waterer for it that is not on a timer yet and won't be for the winter because freezing. But right now, I can just go turn the hose on, set a timer for 15 minutes. And I have a timer that can go in line and just do it for 15 minutes, or I can do it for 15 minutes. But the whole point of doing that is to not have to manually water those. And every raised bed that goes in in my garden that is all being done in raised beds for the kitchen garden is going to have one of those waterers. And I just did the prototype this, you know, last week. I had the parts for it before Self-Reliance Festival. I was hoping to have that up and running for the farm sitter, but then I quickly realized I had a lot of stuff to do, and I decided it was an after SRF project, and now it is an after SRF project that is completed. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, list your manual processes, because when you list them, you will then identify things that do not need to be manual anymore. And sometimes we just do things because we like to work hard. I don't even know. What does it cost to maintain your homestead with you doing all the work? This is something we as homesteaders don't talk about a lot. And that's like, how much are you spending on feed? Where are you getting the feed? How are you getting the feed? How much gas are you spending to get the feed, right? And what other things like that are you spending money on that you're like, wow, I'm living so cheaply, but my chickens cost $700 a month. And that's really expensive for eggs or whatever it is. When you start looking at those things, very eye-opening. Like my sheep create from grass meat, right? Super good profit margin, right? No. They get hay that has to be purchased. Could I produce hay on the property? Sure. But then I have to pay the hay guy, or I'd have to get the equipment to do the hay. And I have found it easier just to buy the hay. We have Timothy grass pellets. We give them as sheep treats that they really like. We do some minerals for them to keep their immune system strong, right? Like all that stuff adds up. We buy fencing, we buy electric wire, we pay for the electricity for the electric fencing. We have different bowls and different things that they're used for watering them. We've made several shelters over the year. We maintain 2 protection dogs, livestock guardian dogs, so the coyotes don't eat them. Those dogs eat dog food. And they eat rabbits. That's why one of the reasons we're producing rabbits, right? So what does it cost really to maintain your homestead, right? And what does that look like if you outsource help on different things? For example, do you have lawn care? If you have lawn care that you're doing now, how much is that going to be when you outsource that? Or if you're cutting your own firewood, what does it cost to buy your firewood when that time comes? All of those things. As you look at your lifestyle, which of those things do you think you'll keep doing? And which of those things do you think you'll start outsourcing? And then what does that look like budgetarily in your future? And are you ready to handle that? What happens with the land, the pets, and the livestock when you die? Because if there's no plan for that and you die and you have, right now we have like 18 sheep, we have 2 goats, we have 40 ducks, we have 4 chickens, 5 chickens. There are 3 dogs on the property. There are 4 cats on the property. And there's a bunch of rabbits. I don't know the precise number right now because, you know, rabbits. So with all of that, if everybody died tomorrow on this homestead, those animals would be SOL. We would have to find homes for the dogs, the cats, the sheep would need to go somewhere. And that could look like they all go to auction and get sold. It could look like they go to the slaughterhouse. For your pets, it could look like they go to shelters that are kill shelters and get put down. So what happens with that? And what happens with your homestead land? Like you've put so much time into building your homestead. Who's going to take it over? Are your kids going to take it over? Or is there something else you want done with it? Or do you not care? You don't have to care. But those are things to think about as you're designing your homestead for old age, because as you get up in years, you might consider how many dang cats you have, because every one of those needs to go somewhere when you die. If you die before your cats die or whatever it is, your pets, right? So having 25 pet dogs is a lot harder to deal with if you die than having one. Things to think about as you assess your homestead. And then how far are medical services and how ready are you to wait for those medical services? By which I mean, if I need to go to the emergency room, I know that I can get there in 25 to 35 minutes to the hospital that's worth a crap. In 15 to 20 minutes, I can get to the one that's not that great, but they're really good at some things. Like if I have a heart attack, that's the one to go to because it's closest. And they're pretty good at stabilizing people who have heart problems and sending them to a different hospital. That's what they do. That's like their thing. pretty good at stitching tacticals hands up too. But that's not where I want to go with a broken leg or, you know, like any of the other stuff that can happen. And sometimes they're not great. And I know this because I've been to the different hospitals in the area. So what does that mean? That means I have to be willing to risk that whatever I have is not manageable in that time period and I die because services are that far away, right? In cities, it's usually more like 5 minutes. When I lived in the city, it would have been 5 minutes from my house to the hospital. With the ambulance here, you can meet the ambulance and then it reduces how much time it takes for them to get all the way across the county to your house. That's a thing. And if you have medical training, there are things you could do to help prolong life so that you're able to wait. That goes back to what Homestead Medical is doing with Chuck Peoples. Like, he's teaching people how to keep people alive. And keeping people alive means you extend the time until they get medical services at the hospital. That means that could be the difference between you made it to the hospital alive and you didn't make it to the hospital alive, right? That's part of why I started taking Stop the Bleed classes and some emergency medical classes was I realized that if we ever had a really bad accident here, I'm it, unless I'm the one injured, and then tactical's it. That's it. That's the two people on the homestead. And if anybody else in the area is home, they will help, right? But we're it until we, even in the best of times, until we get to the services, we're it. So that's if you're on a homestead in remote Wyoming and the nearest hospital is 3 hours away, I hope you have a helicopter or I hope you have in Yellowstone, they always take them to the veterinarian because the veterinarian seems to be close, but the doctors aren't, right? And they have helicopters. That's their plan, right? In that situation. So that's one to think about. And it also may make you think about where you locate your homestead. Do you need to choose a location that's closer to medical services? I don't know. A lot of people have lived and died rurally for many years. Again, decisions you make. So those are all the things I would assess about my homestead before I start worrying what the plan is. I just want to gather the data so I know the weaknesses and the strengths of what's going on. And I've started thinking about what's important to me as I age and what isn't. And at that point, I'll know if my plan is actually I'm just going to move to an old folks community or I'm going to move in with my kids somewhere or whatever. You start seeing what the plan is, but you also start seeing ways that you're wasting your time and your efforts that could be made easier for you to do as you age, but also easier for you to do now. And then your next phase is to brainstorm solutions and changes you're going to make. So this is where you brainstorm ideas and then you choose what it's going to be. And I made an acronym ARP, but it's not the ARP you're thinking of. It's ARRRP. And it just turned out that way. And I had to laugh when it happened. So automations. To the extent that you can do automations on your homestead that makes sense, that work consistently, the more automations you do, the more friendly your homestead is to unpredictable things that happen as we age. So that's kind of cool, right? So that could mean automated watering, feeding. It could mean like my freezers yell at me when they go above temperature and then I make phone calls. It could mean almost anything automated. Chickens in and out of their coops. I bet we could figure out how to rotate the sheep automatically. I bet there's a way to do that, right? There's a way to feed your dogs automatically. There's a way to feed your fish automatically. There's a way to water your plants automatically. We're getting into a world where you can harvest plants automatically. There's all sorts of different things you can do with design with some automation that makes things a lot easier. That's part of why I have an aquaponic system, right? It's basically automated watering and fertilizing for my plants. And for that, I have to feed fish. And every so often, something breaks and I have to fix the thing. But the easiest vegetables I grow on this property come out of the aquaponic system right now. And we're trying to get that for the raised beds because I like easy. Easy means I get to do things I want to do more. And then the second one is R, relocations. That means relocating the things that are far away to be close, and the things that should be far away back over far away if they're close. That can be in your house. That can be outside of your house. But super simple, right? Just list them. Brainstorm solutions for getting it done. If it's something crazy like your stupid barn is in the wrong place, which mine was for 17 years, the solution was given to me in the form of termite damage, right? The building, which was built in like 1970, is done. And my choice is to put about as much money as I would put in a new building into the old building to keep the old building up when it's in the wrong place. So I'm just going to build a new building long term. That's the plan. Renovations. Renovations inside your house, renovations of the land around you. This can mean some shaping of your land to make it easier to get to. It can mean building that accessible shower. It can mean making wider doors. It can be making it easy to convert a room in your house into a bedroom if needs be on the first level. It can mean changing how your barn is set up so that somebody with a wheelchair can go in and take care of things. Because you know what? Somebody with a wheelchair can go in and take care of things if you're set up right. And those kinds of renovations, you brainstorm them all out, you figure out what they're going to be, and then you do your next step with them, which is timeline and budget. But we have two more categories. The next is relationships. This is the community piece. I don't believe that homesteaders should be alone. We should band together. There's no reason not to. And the more of us who are near each other and care about each other and are willing to pitch in, the longer we can all stay on our homesteads. That's just how it works. And you never know when you need that helping hand, right? You never know. Like my concrete pad would have been a lot harder to do had my neighbor with the tractor not come over and moved gravel around for us, right? Like that's super helpful. And that's because we have a relationship where we actually like each other. So does anybody know the website she mentioned? I don't know which website that is. So have to go back to, I think that was a long time ago, probably. Relationships matter and investing in relationships matter. And that means stop working all the time and start working on, have the pizza party. Sometimes you just got to have the pizza party. I don't even eat pizza and I had a pizza party and I ate pizza. It was delicious. So, and then the last one is P for permaculture. The permaculture design system is set up to help you make your homestead make more sense in old age, especially if you know that's one of your goals as you're making the plan, right? So you can, by evaluating things in the zones and by figuring out how to function stack and by being truthful about how much time you want to spend maintaining things, have one thing feed another, so it just works more easily. So that's your brain, the categories that you look for solutions and changes. And then based on that brainstorm list, you've got to prioritize what you really think needs to happen as part of your plan for your homestead. And that's when we get into timeline and budget. So you prioritize which projects are most important. And for me, one that hit the priority list this year has nothing to do with automating water or moving sheep or moving my garden. And it's the installation of a swim spa. What? What's that have to do with homesteading, Nicole? It has a lot to do with homesteading. Therapeutic exercise helps keep your body running longer. And I didn't even realize what I was doing when I did this, but my mom needs to get knee replacement done. And she'll be rebuilding muscle after that, right? And she'll be doing that at her home. And then eventually she's going to come visit me a few months after that's happened. And guess what? Guess what? I have a swim spa so she can do some resistance watering, walking in water, which is a great way to rehabilitate injuries like that. That wasn't part of my plan. I just did it for my own future mobility because I know the more work I do now, the better off I am or the longer I go into old age with mobility. So likewise, setting up things so that we're less likely to hurt ourselves, right, is also an important piece of mobility into your old age. Like the less you break bones, the better off your old age will be because you don't have those old breaks come in back to hurt you. So, Ed Salio says, you don't eat pizza? I feel you. I'm Italian and don't eat it either. Yeah, so mostly I'm carnivore keto. I usually just eat vegetables and meat, but, you know, it was my birthday last week. So I was like, we're going to have pizza, we're going to have cake, and then I'm going to go on with my life and go back to being keto. That's just the way. Mom, in fact, mom put, so I have this whole cake, just to do, go on a bunny trail aside, side quest, as Kiri would say. I made this cake thinking all these people are coming over, the cake will be gone. Like a third of the cake got eaten yesterday. And every time I opened the fridge this morning, I was like, there's a giant cake in there. And then I opened it and there's like the cake was gone. Mama Sauce was in the house and she cut it up into pieces and froze it for future visits that she'll be here. And I was like, okay. She's like, or you can give it to your chickens. I'm like, yeah, what I don't need to do is eat the whole cake. I was really hoping that more of the cake would go out. Yeah. So you prioritize those projects, whatever they are. Assess before you begin working on them what it's really going to take to do it. So you'll be like, these 10 things, if I change these 10 things on my homestead, will make everything better. It could be automated watering and running water to livestock. It could be finding a better way to automate the fence changes or the moving of the sheep. It could be, we no longer want to have chickens because they're a pain in the butt anyway, so why work on that? It could be moving the garden. It could be wider doorways. It could be having an immediate area outside your house where you have a kitchen garden that can be maintained, and it's a kind of a cool hangout spot at the same time. So you're growing vegetables, but you also have this cool hangout. Like, it could be any number of things, some of them more fun than others. And then assess what each one of those takes. For me, this has looked a lot like, what part of my house requires manual intervention to keep from dying, freezing, getting wet, rotting, falling apart, because I heat with wood in the winter and because I have water that my water system is not city water. So I have to keep the water system going. And how can I make that so it requires less and less human interaction? And some of that has meant new roofs and new joists and different insulation and different designs on the pump house and all of these things. They're big projects and you have to know all the steps before you start. I had that conversation this morning. I'm like, the prepper pantry needs to be at this end state for us to be able to use the prepper pantry for its intended purpose, which is a utility closet and a place where I store things. Okay. Some of which are paper goods and some of which are food goods, which means it has to be done to the point where mice can't get in from outside because exclusion is the best cure for a mouse problem. It's not cats. It's just keeping them out to begin with, right? So once you have all of those, you can look and say, okay, what's a reasonable timeline for getting this done? So you don't drive yourself crazy trying to do everything at one time, like I usually do. But also so you have a better grasp on what each one's costs, because the cost piece will come into it as you're making these kinds of changes on your homestead. Is it really worth the money for that thing? Or would I rather put it over? Can I knock out 9 of the 10 for the same amount as that one? And do I just want to do that so they're all done? And then I'll do the one, right? That could be an approach. Or you might do it the other way. I'm going to get the big expensive one done, and then it's all cruising from here. And then you want to compare, like, it costs this much, it makes this much of a difference. And if it's a huge difference for a little amount of money, you might as well just get that one done right away, because it'll make your life easy now. And making your life easy now is great. You don't have to wait till old age to be ready for, you know, to have an easier homestead. You want an easier homestead now. And then you do one step at a time. This kind of goes back to my three things thing, right? Enjoy the journey. That's the point of a homestead. It's a project that is always developing. And as your interests and priorities change, it's going to change to some extent. So enjoy that part of it. Don't feel like you have to work towards this ideal you set up 20 years ago for your homestead that you no longer care about. That would be me, right? The homestead I wanted 20 years ago is not the homestead I have now. And the homestead I wanted 20 years ago is also not the homestead I want now. So that's a big difference, right? I wanted something that was feeding lots and lots of people. And now I'm like, you know, we could pull back on that. I'd be okay. In fact, we also don't eat as much as we used to eat. So we don't even need as much as we used to need, right? So those things happen over time. And then just be ready to let some things go. Part of being on a homestead when you age is that you may choose not to do some things anymore. And that could be anything from this year we all gave up on our gardens because they sucked, which is kind of a joke I have with my friend, my gardening friend, Carly. I was like, how's your garden? She's like, yeah, no, not there. Like, my fall garden is small and it's doing fine. But because I was gone for most of the summer on and off, my garden did not get the weeding it needed to get, and it didn't get the watering attention, even with automated watering, that it needed to get. And then we had a hard year for pest pressure. Those three things made my garden give me some food, but not very much food compared to usual. And at some point I identified that I had to let that go so that I could prioritize other things. And the other things I prioritized was, to the extent I could, I was helping Tactical with sheep matters and other things, because long-term, that's part of the long-term food plan. And that was more critical than my green beans dying, right? Sheep dying hurts more than green beans dying. So I just had to let it go. And if I were to get, you know, 20 years from now, I may not want to be running sheep anymore up and down steep hills. Like, right now it's okay. And it takes work, but it's okay. Might have to let your housing go. Like, you've built your perfect house. It's huge. It's 4,000 square feet. You're one person. Why are you in a 4,000 square foot home? It's time for you to move out and let your kids take over that house, right? So your housing, like, I've got a camper here where somebody can stay and help on the homestead. That might be where I stay one day. Who knows? It's a lot less space, right? But there you go. Margo says, I bought a brand new raised bed, planted seeds for the fall garden. Hurricane flipped it over like a champ. Now I walk by and say, I need to clean that up. Yeah, sometimes you got to let it go. And eventually Margo will clean that up, and I'm sure it will be growing food for her at some point. You know, just, you know, you can't help that the wind flipped it over. That is what it is. Trade skills for food. As your mobility is impacted and you're producing less, you still have knowledge other people don't have. And there are people in your community just killing it on production who may hate canning or may hate drying or may hate, you know, whatever, picking them for all I know. So you can start, like, when you have built those relationships, you can tap into the community for where you're at. And then, you know, back to letting it go. Are you a homestead purist? Are you an off-grid purist? Got to let that go. Like, is your rule for yourself that everything absolutely has to be grown on your property, preserved on your property, or you don't consume it at all? You might need to let that go at some point. You might need to, you know, get some stuff from some other people. Or you may have to decide that your off-grid solution's great, but you really need a way to have a different kind of heat than wood heat. I don't know. I don't know what your situation is, but if you get too stuck in the paradigm or the commandments you've given to yourself about how your system has to be, you may miss a very simple solution that's just a little bit away from the ideal, that works perfectly well and is better than anything you could have done and keeps you on your homestead longer. Because at the end of the day, the whole purpose of the show is, how do we stay on our homesteads longer? And the answer is going to be different for everybody. If you like the show and want to support the work I'm doing here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee at Holler Roast. Two, consider becoming a member. Find out more at livingfreeintennessee.com. With that, guys, go out and make it a great week.